Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, June 1st, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the names in the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Suzanne Anderson, Laura Ann Bixler, Delma Jean Kane, Nancy Bradford Clark, Claudia Gray, Joan Helms, Joseph B. Kaufman, Catherine Mary Lab, Scott Keister Lindstrom, Deborah K. Nagorka, Jean L. O'Connell, Scott Frederick Peterson, Pamela H. Sanborn, Joyce Alma Sands, Sandra Ann Sequest, Patricia Catherine Simmons, known as Trish, Richard Francis Snodgrass, Harriet Yvonne Trieske, and Nancy Carolyn Westmoreland. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of these individuals. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. The first article on the economy section is entitled "Flip the Script on Your Money Mindset." This was written by Rachel Barber for the USA Today. When Brad Klontz's maternal grandfather went to his bank one day, he discovered that all of his money was gone. His bank was one of the thousands of financial institutions that failed during the Great Depression. He was so traumatized that he never put a dollar in a bank again. And his daughter carried some of that risk aversion into her life, investing only in certificates of deposit, and she felt ashamed of being poor. While growing up, Klontz internalized some of that shame and wanted to be wealthy. But to get there, he decided that instead of being extremely cautious like his mother and grandfather, he would go in the opposite direction. Starting at $100,000 in student loan debt in his 20s, he sold his truck and he bought a $500 car. He invested the rest in one asset class in the stock market. And then the dot-com bubble burst, and he watched that money fade away. Klontz said, quote, "I went from the most risk-averse to the riskiest possible approach. That's dysfunctional. It's not moderation." Klontz is now a certified financial planner and psychologist. He says that he was following a, quote, "money script," unquote. That's a term that he coined for the unconscious beliefs, often rooted in childhood, that affect your financial behaviors as an adult. But just because financial habits are often molded by things out of your control, it doesn't mean that you cannot change them. The first step to having a healthier relationship with money is understanding where you stand. So what is your money script? Klontz's story is just one example of how people's attitudes toward money are passed down through generations and shaped by experiences or trauma. He calls his experience a, quote, "dysfunctional pendulum swing," unquote. It's something you often see when alcoholism runs in a family, he said. The child of an alcoholic parent either becomes one or never drinks a drop in their life. Helping people uncover their money scripts and rewrite them has led to improved mental health. One study he conducted found that people's savings rate increased 73% when they became more aware of their psychological relationship with money. The four main money scripts are money avoidance, money focus, money status, and money vigilance. And Klontz offers a free diagnostic test to help determine your own. You can go to bradklontz.com. That's BRADKLONTZ.com. Now, for money avoidance, those who are money avoidant tend to believe money is inherently bad or corrupting. Money avoidance might avoid thinking or talking about money and ignore financial statements and financially enable others, or they overspend. Jack Howard, head of financial wellness at Ally Financial, discusses money stories, which is a concept similar to money scripts, in her financial education workshops. She often sees parents hesitate to have conversations about finances with their children because their own parents avoided the subject. Klontz advises the money avoidant to schedule periodic money check-ins to financially support people and causes that they care about, and to identify a role model who uses wealth to do good to strengthen their overall relationship with money. Now, the money vigilant individuals are cautious and concerned about their financial well-being. They save for the future, avoid unnecessary debt, and believe that hard work pays off. But identifying with this script can lead to missing out on experiences due to fear-based decision-making. Klontz said, as a financial advisor, he has seen wealthy people struggle to spend their money, even in retirement, because they are used to being so vigilant. Klontz said, quote, "People who are really high on money vigilance may end up with the highest net worth, but are they happy? Can they sleep at night? Are they so vigilant around money that they can't spend it?" Unquote. Well, if that sounds like you, he advises that you create a fun money budget. Check in with an advisor who will set your mind at ease and set limits on how often you can monitor your finances. Now, money-focused individuals often believe that money is the key to happiness and a solution to life's problems, but also no amount is enough, according to Klontz. Klontz himself identifies with this script, but he also scores high in the money vigilance category. It is a duality that he sees a lot in business professionals. He said, quote, "The two go hand in hand. Why would you be so conscientious and concerned about it if you didn't want more of it?" Unquote. But unchecked money focus can actually lead to lower net worth and higher levels of debt as people try to buy happiness and they prioritize work over relationships, according to the research. Tips for the money focused include pausing before making a purchase to determine if you need it, and realizing money can buy comfort but not connection, giving both money and time to causes and people that matter to you can also help those who identify with this script. And now we get to the status. If you often tie your self-worth to your net worth, you may find the money status script familiar. Individuals who fall into this category may be a fan of outward displays of wealth and see them as a way to gain respect. Howard said, as a mom to a Gen Z child, she sees the younger generations buying things to showcase and achieve status on social media. Those social network influencers and ads can also lead to more impulse buying, she said. So to avoid the most negative outcomes, including overspending and compulsive gambling and financial dependence on others, money status seekers should take a step back. Klontz advises them to pause before they purchase, schedule money check-ins, and take care of their overall health instead of only chasing financial goals. And that was the article, Flip the Script on Your Money Mindset. Our second article from the economy section is entitled GM Credit Card Relaunch Brings More Rewards. This is written by Jackie Charnica from the Detroit Free Press out of Detroit. Taking cues from the travel industry, General Motors plans to relaunch its credit card under a new lender and change how points can be accrued and used on automotive purchases. The new card provides customers more ways to earn and redeem GM reward points on new vehicles or services or parts or accessories, according to the company. GM employees, retirees, dealership employees, and suppliers are eligible for vehicle discounts. They're now able to use GM reward points on top of that discount. The card allows customers to earn up to 10 times the points on eligible GM purchases. Broken down by 7 times the points for every $1 spent when using the GM Rewards MasterCard, plus up to 3 times the points for being a GM Rewards member. All other purchases qualify for 3 times the points, which GM said can also be redeemed on GM financial account balances. Now, the automaker has more than 13 million GM Rewards members. GM has had a branded credit card since 1992. Members of the company rewards program on average purchase vehicles with 5% higher manufacturer-suggested retail prices than non-members. They visit GM dealerships twice as often as non-members, and they typically repurpose GM vehicles almost 3 years sooner than a non-member, according to Ralph Darmo, who is head of GM Rewards. He said, quote, "The value of these members is why GM has made the decision to invest in those members. We are making the program better," unquote. So one of the main changes is simplifying the program, streamlining the various separate branded rewards all down to one. Instead of Cadillac rewards and Chevy rewards and Buick rewards and GMC rewards and My Rewards, all of that is now lumped into My Rewards. The goal is to improve the experience for dealerships as well as customers, Darmo said, because of the confusion over whether or not a GMC Rewards member could apply points on a Buick purchase, for example. He said, quote, "You will get more points when you buy GM under the new program. We're also removing some of the restrictions. There will not be earning caps. There's no redemption caps. There's no exclusion on vehicles anymore. And the points are universal. The points can be used across all GM brands for a new GM vehicle or a certified pre-owned vehicle," unquote, he said. The GM Rewards loyalty program now works through GM Rewards MasterCard, which is serviced by Barclays U.S. Consumer Bank. In addition to purchases at GM dealerships, the credit card also allows customers to gain and redeem points on digital services, like most OnStar plans and SuperCruise, which is the hands-free driver assistance technology. Eventually, GM hopes to ensure the points can be used on electric vehicle charging cost. Existing card members should use them until August 25th, GM said, and they can expect their new replacement Barclays card later this summer, along with the activation instructions. Darmo also added that the card includes member-exclusive experiences. Late in 2025, GM and Barclays plan to launch the GM Business MasterCard for business customers with a higher earn rate on GM purchases and expanded redemption options. And that was the article, GM Credit Card Relaunch Bringing More Rewards. Our third article from the economy section. Burger King unveils menu items inspired by How to Train Your Dragon, written by Grabe Hauri, H-A-U-A-R-I. I may have mispronounced that. Well, Burger King has teamed up with Universal Pictures to create a new menu inspired by the upcoming live-action remake of How to Train Your Dragon. The fast food chain invites customers to take a trip to the Isle of Burk, with 4 new menu items that are available for a limited time. The new items will include Dragon Flame Grilled Whopper. It features a 1/4 pound of flame grilled beef served on a red and orange marbled bun, colored with natural spices and vegetables, topped with American cheese, bacon, tomatoes, lettuce, onion, pickles, ketchup, and mayo. Then there's the Fiery Dragon Mozzarella Fries. It features melty mozzarella cheese, peppers, and a fiery Calabrian chili pepper breading served in a one-of-a-kind Toothless-inspired Toothless-inspired carton. Then there's the Soaring Strawberry Lemonade, made with lemonade, sugar, fruit puree, and natural flavors. And finally, Viking's Chocolate Sundae. It features vanilla soft-served with Hershey's chocolate syrup and black and green cookie crumbles. Joel Yashinsky, who is Chief Marketing Officer of Burger King US&C, said in a news release, quote, "Our new collaboration with How to Train Your Dragon is going to be fun for both kids and kids at heart. Our team has created a delicious menu inspired by the beloved characters and the themes of this exciting new movie that brings that experience to Burger King restaurants," unquote. Well, in addition to the new menu, Burger King launched a Night Fury Flight game inspired by the film, and that's available exclusively in the Burger King app and website. And through July 15th, Royal Perks members can play daily to receive exclusive offers and be entered for a chance to win sweepstakes prizes, like an AMC Theater gift card or a grand prize trip for four to Universal Orlando Resort in order to experience the new How to Train Your Dragon Isle of Burke attraction. The How to Train Your Dragon live-action remake is set to be released in theaters on June 13th. And that was the article, Burger King Unveils Menu Items Inspired by How to Train Your Dragon. Well, we're coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, so it's time for us to move over to the sports section. The cover story from the front page of the sports section of the Arizona Republic was written by Richard Obert, and it's about high school sports in Arizona. It's entitled, The Republic's Top 10 Quarterbacks in 2025. Summer is about to start, and before you know it, the 2025 Arizona high school football season will be here. To get through another hot summer, the Arizona Republic examines a position each week with a top 10 list. We will also include polls along the way, asking you to vote for the player you think is top gun at each position ahead of the season. The poll appears after the list. Print readers can find it with this story online. I guess I should tell you that email address, that website address, but I think I'll do it at the end of the article. So we're going to start it off with what this state is best known for, producing top quarterbacks. The year in school listed for each quarterback is for this upcoming 2025 season. Number one, Brady Goodman from Mesa Mountain View, 6 foot, 4 inch, 215 pounds, a senior. The multi-sport athlete really elevated himself last season as a dual threat, leading the Toros to the 6A championship game. But in the semifinals and final, he was playing on one good ankle. Under head coach Andy Litton, Goodman will keep thriving. He's coming off a season in which he passed for 3,087 yards and 43 touchdowns, and he ran for 435 yards and 11 scores. Number two, Gunnar Fagrell from Gilbert Higley. He's also 6'1", but he's 190 pounds. He is a senior. Now that he will be quarterback one on a full-time basis, Fagrell is set to break out like he did his sophomore season, when he led the Knights to a second straight 5A state championship, putting up video numbers. He can run well enough to keep defenses honest, and his ability to find receivers in small windows does set him apart. And he's got a swagger that makes him a natural leader. Number three is Britt DeWitt from ALA Queen Creek. He is 6'2", 195 pounds, a senior. Now, he was not eligible until midway through his junior year, but he came of age in an open semifinal thriller against Chandler Basha. He threw for 377 yards and 5 touchdowns, nearly willing a victory with his 34-yard run in the final seconds, only to get sacked on the next play, clinching Basha's ticket to the final. College coaches are not scrambling for him, but he could be Brock Purdy 2.0. Number four, Cale Snyder from Gilbert Perry. He is 6 foot 3 inches, 215 pounds. He's a junior next year. Maybe the most highly recruited quarterback for the 2025 season. Snyder has big-time potential with his size, arm strength, and accuracy. Now, he still is fine-tuning everything, but he is set to have a huge junior season for the Pumas, looking to get them into the open division playoffs. Number five is Donovan Dixon from Cave Creek Cactus Shadows. He's only 5 feet 10 inches, 185 pounds. He'll be a senior. He might be the most electrifying quarterback in the state, thanks to his speed, his moves, and his ability to throw on the run. He is as fun to watch as any playmaker in the state. And with his work ethic and desire to be the best, you can expect an even greater version of himself this fall. Number six, Brody Vehrs, V-E-H-R-S, from Chandler Basha. 6 feet, 195 pounds, be a senior. He was terrific in his first season as quarterback, following one of the state's all-time greats in Demond Williams Jr. Watch what he does in his second full season, directing what could be the state's most explosive offense, surrounded by playmakers. He is so good at finding the right guy to get the ball to. He's poised, he's got a big arm, he's accurate, and he's confident. Number seven, Blake Roskopf from Goodyear Desert Edge. He is 6 feet, 5 inches, 225 pounds. He's a junior this year. He's got 9 major college offers already. He's a Ben Roethlisberger-type quarterback with a big arm. He's not afraid to take big shots down the field. He led the Scorpions to the 5A state title as a sophomore. His potential is through the roof. Number 8, Marcel Jones from Scottsdale Saguaro. 6 foot 2 inches, 190 pounds. He'll be a senior this year. This will be his first full varsity season in his career. And with offensive coordinator Noel Mazzone fine-tuning his game and putting him in positions to succeed, this could be a big breakout season for the dual-threat quarterback. Improved arm strength and accuracy will be on display. Number 9, Colton Meyer from Marana. 6 foot 1 inch, 180 pounds, senior. He finished third in the state in passing last year with 3,687 yards. He passed for 30 touchdowns. He completed 74% of his passes. Now, he won't have Player of the Year Desmond Roebuck to get the ball to, but Roebuck's little brother, Seen, he's back to find the end zone for the team that went 10-0 in the regular season. And number 10, Will Mensie from Chandler. 6 foot 3 inch, 205 pounds, he'll be a junior. He was really getting comfortable running Chandler's offense in his first year there last season before an injury ended it. If he can stay healthy, he's got a chance to prove that he might be as good as any quarterback in the state. There are lots of playmakers around him, particularly Jai Jones. Those were the Republic's top 10 quarterbacks in 2025. Now, if you wanted to go to the poll and vote, you would go to azcentral.com/sports/high-schools, and that will get you to the voting section. That's azcentral.com/sports/high-schools. When I say dash, I'm talking about that horizontal line between two letters, halfway between the top and the bottom of the two letters. So that was the cover story from the front page of the sports section, the Republic's top 10 quarterbacks in 2025. Our next article from the interior of the sports section is entitled Staley Wants More from ESPN for Women's Sports, written by Lulu Kessen of the Greenville News from Columbia, South Carolina. University of South Carolina women's basketball coach Dawn Staley believes women's college basketball and the WNBA are more popular than ever right now. Staley wants to take advantage of the attention to move women's basketball forward. Staley said on May 29th, when asked what she sees for the future of women's sports during an event for her new book, she said, quote, "I think we're at our most popular. We are in high demand. I do feel like we need to capitalize right now," unquote. Staley held the event in Columbia to celebrate her book entitled Uncommon Favor, Basketball, North Philly, My Mother, and Life Lessons I Learned from All Three. That book was published on May 20th. The question came just days after she returned from Florida for SEC meetings, an annual series of meetings for coaches in the conference. Staley joked that in settings like those, she may sound crazy when she talks about capitalizing on women's sports and growing the industry. Staley asked the crowd at the event what should happen next, to which a few replied, more money. And Staley said that was the right answer. She went on and said, quote, "We should get more money from ESPN. We're in a television deal. When we signed the deal 3 or 4 years ago, we weren't where we are today. Let's go back to the table. Let's talk about where we are today. Let's negotiate in good faith," unquote. NCAA women's basketball does not have its own TV deal with ESPN, but in January of 2024, the NCAA and ESPN reached an 8-year agreement for NCAA championship media rights. The new deal began September 1, 2024, and it included domestic rights to 40 NCAA championships, 21 of them women's events. Now, during the 24-25 season, more than 220 games aired on ESPN platforms, including ABC, ESPN2, ESPNU, SEC Network, and ACC Network, in addition to just over 3,400 on ESPN's affiliated platforms like ESPN Plus and SEC Network Plus. Well, this past season was the most watched regular season on ESPN platforms since 2008 and 2009. Viewership finished 3% above last year's regular season and 41% more than the 22-23 season. An average of 280,000 viewers watched women's basketball via ESPN this season. March Madness viewership alone averaged 1.2 million viewers. That's a 22% increase from 2023. Staley said, quote, "I want ESPN to step up to the plate. Give us a little bit more from collegiately to the WNBA," unquote. So for the 11th consecutive season, the Gamecocks have led the nation in attendance. In 2024 and 25, South Carolina averaged 16,437 fans per home game. Staley candidly admitted that when she arrived 17 years ago, she did not envision selling out the arenas. She said, quote, "You can't tell me that when we will have a sellout crowd that the concession stands aren't making money, right? You can't tell me that businesses and restaurants and hotels aren't making money off of women's basketball. So when you say women's basketball isn't a revenue-producing sport, you've got to take an account for all of it." And that was the article, Staley Wants More from ESPN for Women's Sports. And finally, here's an article about motorsports racing or auto racing. It's entitled, Music City Set for Encore After 5 OT Thriller. It's written by Field Level Media. As the NASCAR Cup Series moves to Tennessee for Sunday night's Cracker Barrel 400 at the Nashville Super Speedway, former series champion Brad Keselowski still was thinking about the just-completed visit to Charlotte. After battling late into last Sunday night in the Coca-Cola 600 at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, the RFK racing driver said he could have used more laps to score his first win of 2025. In Keselowski's estimation, 100 more miles would have helped to improve on a fifth-place finish that gave him his first top-10 result of 2025. He led 5 laps, and he said, quote, "We got mixed up in some of the different stuff in the midpoint of the race and just clawed our way out. I feel like if we could have got to the lead, we would have won the race." I wish it was a 700-mile race, unquote. Well, the night did get better for Keselowski as the race went longer, which is pretty much how the season has played out for the Rochester Hills, Michigan native. The first third of the season is far from what was expected from the number 6 Ford. After the dust had settled in Kansas on May 11th and Kyle Larson had pulled into a tie with Christopher Bell for the series lead with 3 wins, Keselowski found himself in a wretched locale in the standings. He was 33rd out of 36 drivers. Well, he is currently in 32nd, just ahead of Shane Van Gisbergen, Riley Herbst, and Cole Custer. The trio slotting in front of Keselowski are Ty Dillon, Daniel Suarez, and Justin Haley. Now, it's far from the glory days when Keselowski, who won 5 races during his 2012 title year and 6 2 years later. Since his 4 victory showing during the shortened 2020 COVID season, he has won just twice in 157 races, Talladega in 2021 and Darlington last May. In 4 career starts at Nashville, Keselowski has posted a best finish of 11th 2 seasons ago and was 25th last year, although he has won in support races. RFK Racing received good news this week when a portion of the penalty on the number 17 Ford driven by Chris Buescher was rescinded. While crew chief Scott Graves has already served the 2-race suspension for the front bumper cover infraction discovered at Kansas, the National Motorsports Appeals Panel reduced Buescher's 60-point penalty in half Wednesday, allowing the Texas driver to advance from 23rd to 16th in the standings. On Sunday, Ross Chastain ran down William Byron over the final 37 laps to capture the longest race of the season and become the 9th different winner in the past 9 races at Charlotte. After fending off a battle with Denny Hamlin, Byron withstood a charge from Chastain until 6 laps remained. Chastain picked up his first win of the season by a mere 0.673 seconds, and he did it in the backup car while he started 40th and last in the field. So while Chastain led just 8 laps in Charlotte, Joey Logano led just 9 laps while winning at Nashville last year in a 5th overtime. Logano held off Zane Smith and Tyler Reddick while running the last 110 laps on a single tank of fuel. And that's Music City, set for the encore after 5 OT Thriller. Well, we're coming up on 33 minutes past the hour, so we better move on over and read some opinions. We're going to start with an opinion piece by E.J. Montini, entitled Senator Kelly's Insider Trading Bill is Doomed from the Start. I do not know if Arizona Senator Mark Kelly has read Cervantes' novel Don Quixote. What I do know is that during his time as a U.S. Senator, he has lived it, particularly that part where Cervantes writes, quote, "Perhaps to be too practical is madness. To surrender dreams, this may be madness. Too much sanity may be madness, and maddest of all, to see life as it is, and not as it should be," unquote. Kelly and Georgia Senator John Ossoff are introducing, as they have before, a bill that would require Washington politicians to do what Kelly and Ossoff already have done, which is put their stock portfolios in blind trust. They wish, in other words, not to see politics as it is, corrupt, but as it should be. Of this most recent effort, Kelly said, quote, "As Americans work hard to keep up with rising cost, the last thing they should have to worry about is whether their elected representatives are using inside information to make a quick buck. This isn't rocket science. The only way to stop insider trading in Congress is to stop members of Congress from trading stocks, period. Fixing this would go a long way toward restoring trust and fixing what's broken in Washington," unquote. Now, roughly 90% of Americans support this idea. Ironically, so does Donald Trump. Or so he says. Trump told Time magazine that if a bill banning congressional stock trading landed on his desk, he would sign it. Trump said, quote, "Well, I watched Nancy Pelosi get rich through insider information, and I would be okay with it. If they send that to me, I would do it. Absolutely." Unquote. I can hear you laughing. Or was that guffawing? Or was it both? Trump says Pelosi is the problem? Not long ago, Trump held an event at his Virginia golf club for 220 buyers of his $Trump novelty crypto token. He hauled in $148 million. Describing this particular cash grab, Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley said, quote, "Trump's crypto schemes are profoundly corrupt. He's selling access to his administration and enriching himself in the process," unquote. Pelosi is a pauper compared to the cash that Trump's business empire has been raking in since Trump came back to the White House. They've made billions, according to a New York Times report. Meanwhile, Republicans in Congress are turning a blind eye. Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, actually claimed he didn't even know about Trump's latest crypto grift. During a CNN interview, Jake Tapper said to him, quote, "I really have a difficult time imagining that if this was a Democratic president holding a top dinner for top investors in his private cryptocurrency, that you wouldn't be outraged," unquote. And to which Johnson then replied, quote, "Look, I don't know anything about the dinner. I was a little busy this past week, so I'm not going to comment on something I haven't even heard about," unquote. Haven't heard about it? Really? What that means, of course, is that Kelly's anti-corruption bill has no chance. Zero. But then again, if Trump meant what he said, he could take action on his own, as he has done over and over in the past few months. He could issue an executive order banning congressional stock trading. Oh, I'm not sure it would stand up in court, but I guess that all of the subservient Republicans in Congress, which is all of them, would follow his dictate anyway. Now, Trump would not do such a thing, however, given his own behavior, but that should not stop us from imagining the possibility, or, as Cervantes put it, to dream the impossible dream. And that was E.J. Montini's opinion piece. Senator Kelly's insider trading bill is doomed from the start. Our next opinion piece was written by Phil Boas. He's a columnist for the Arizona Republic, and it's entitled "Mayor Wrong to Gripe About Data Centers." Here's what he wrote. The State of the City address is usually a well-scripted big hall production with cinematic screens that inflate the image of the mayor and the city. In other words, they can be honors. But five words, however, stood out in Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego's May 20th State of the City address. Quote, "Data centers serve a purpose," unquote. Well, such faint praise is damning from a mayor of one of the global leaders in data processing. When measured against the world markets in operational IT or information technology, Phoenix ranks fourth behind the state of Virginia, Beijing, the capital city of China, and the state of Oregon, and that's according to Cushman Wakefield Global Research. That's a lot of servers on a lot of racks soaking up a lot of electricity, and that gives the mayor angst. Today, Gallego said, more than 90% of our utilities' prospective queue of new industrial electricity use is made up by one kind of user, data centers. Data centers serve a purpose, but they also pose risk and take up so much energy that it threatens the future of other kinds of businesses. Well, from there, she went on to knock data centers for their noise, their heat, their small number of jobs. She called on the state to roll back tax incentives for new data centers. And as valid as that sounds, I just still can't get past the mayor's five words, data centers serve a purpose. She's damn right they do. In a world in which the computer is the universal tool, data centers are essential to our private and professional lives. They are the engines of the modern economy. I would guess, and I would not be wrong, that someone as savvy as Kate Gallego is a maestro at using her cell phone and laptop to simultaneously manage family, campaigns, policy initiatives, speaking engagements, and her city of 1.6 million people. In her speech, Gallego touted all the great successes Phoenix is stacking up, from Taiwan's semi-manufacturing corporation's $165 billion investment in Arizona microchip production, to the region's maturing bioscience sector, to the advanced robotics of United Foods International that just put its North American headquarters in Phoenix. So without data centers, much of that progress turns to chassis on the blocks. So yes, data centers do serve a purpose. And thus, America is on a tear to build the data-crunching infrastructure that will feed what looks like the next economic revolution, AI, or artificial intelligence. So is AI a mirage? Well, that's a great question to ask, because we don't know the answer yet. Plenty of governments and investors believe it is real. The world's two superpowers, the United States and China, are betting hundreds of billions of dollars that AI will produce breakthroughs in virtually every field of endeavor. So great is the demand for computing infrastructure that so-called hyperscalers, those are the major companies that drive growth and investment, they're planning to deploy some $1.8 trillion in capital across the globe to build it. That's according to a January report from Boston Consulting Group. Chase Lockmiller, co-founder and CEO of Crusoe Energy Systems, told Bloomberg Technology, quote, "What we're undergoing right now is sort of the largest infrastructure build in human history," unquote. So if Arizona is going to ride this new industrial wave, it's going to have to develop not only the new energy that data centers and AI require, but the higher power loads that conventional businesses will also demand. In an op-ed published 2 days before the mayor's speech, Sandra Watson, president and CEO of the Arizona Commerce Authority, defended data centers as the backbone of AI development. In what looks like it could have been a preemptive strike, Watson argued on the Arizona Daily Star's Tucson.com that data centers can help lead the way to more renewable energy infrastructure. Quote, "Data center companies commit to substantial renewable energy purchases, providing a stable demand that supports utility companies in upgrading infrastructure and transitioning to low-carbon power generation. These investments help make large-scale clean energy projects financially viable, ensuring a sustainable energy future," unquote. Well, data centers require a lot of water to cool their IT equipment, but Arizona data centers are, quote, "increasing the use of sustainable water sources, improving efficiency, and maximizing water use," unquote, according to what Watson wrote. Now, because Arizona created a low-cost business environment, the tech giants, which includes Amazon, American Express, Apple, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Oracle, and PayPal, they've been coming here to operate the data centers. These are valuable relationships that the state is building with the key companies that will lead the AI advance, Watson wrote. She wrote, quote, "As this technology continues to develop and further opportunities emerge, these relationships will be crucial," unquote. Gallego, on the other hand, argues that cities have to manage limited resources. And that is why Phoenix has proposed to follow Chandler's lead and create restrictive zoning for data centers. Gallego and Watson are two dynamic leaders who will continue to influence the direction of the Arizona economy, and they're locked in a debate that this state must have as it moves forward. I eagerly await the next round. And that was Phil Boaz's opinion piece, Mayor wrong to gripe about data centers. Well, we're at 45 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section, and we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. We will begin with the sign of Aries. Birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Your appearance is ridiculed. A painful past memory is awakened. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th. Do you know how loved you are? Heartache arouses. Resist the urge to self-isolate. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st. Have you been betrayed by a friend? Before you react, pause, because there is a lesson here. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd. An issue with a boss or colleague should be addressed head-on. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd. You seek more out of life, and yet you feel denied at every turn. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, trust is scary. A heart wound is reopened so that healing can take place. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, today prompts you to find the balance that has been lost in a relationship. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are you giving more than you are getting? The body keeps the score. Pay attention to its signals. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, acknowledge an unhealthy attraction so that history won't repeat. Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates. Are you holding space for a loved one? Remember, their emotional safety should not come at the expense of yours. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, share compassionately, even if it feels awkward. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you struggling to strengthen your self-confidence? Scarcity is a trigger, but sometimes less is more. And those were today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. Dear Abby, I have been divorced from my ex-husband, Cliff, for a year and a half. My nearly adult children live with me. They rarely see their dad. Our divorce was relatively painless, but the custody battle was prolonged, and most of my savings were drained in the process. Cliff pays child support, but I'm still struggling financially to raise two growing teenagers, and I'm worried about them going off to college. A few months ago, I reconnected with a childhood friend I'll call Rob. We have rediscovered our friendship, and we see each other often. He recently expressed interest in a romantic relationship. Abby, I'm still in love with my husband. It wasn't my choice to separate, and although Rob is very sweet, I don't feel comfortable moving on so quickly. However, he has a high-paying job, and when we occasionally go out to dinner, he always pays the bill. I'm afraid I won't be able to afford my kids' college without his financial support. I'm torn between my love for my children and my continued love for my ex-husband. Should I pursue this relationship even though I don't feel the same? Signed, Anguished in Albuquerque. Dear Anguished, tell Rob that you are still not over your divorce, and add that while you like him very much and you enjoy his company, you are not ready for a romantic relationship. It is the truth, and he deserves that. As to the fact that you think you still love the husband who wanted a divorce, it's time to accept that the marriage is history. Once you do that, you may find a future with Rob more to your liking. Our second letter goes, Dear Abby, I am someone who calls friends, but they never call back. When I call, they're happy to hear from me. The conversations are lively and fun, and the friends say they love when I call. I do not call often, and I don't feel I'm making a nuisance of myself. However, like I said, they don't call back. I can understand not hearing from newer friends, but I resent not hearing from ones I've had my whole life. I could have died, and they couldn't bother to find out if I'm okay or get an update on my life. I know I should drop them and move on, but I can't. I need help with that. These are people I've never had a cross word with. Something, it could be an upcoming holiday, reminds me of them, and I want to make contact. Why do people do this to people they say they love and care about? Signed, Perplexed in Florida. Dear Perplexed, people behave this way because they are stressed, busy, or distracted. Most of the time, it is not personal. Not everyone is a caller like you are. If you want to maintain those relationships, you have to be prepared to do the calling. I'm not saying this to be judgmental or to make excuses for them. It's just a fact of life. And those were the two letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. You can contact her in two different ways. One way is to go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And those were the letters of advice. At 52 minutes past the hour, we've got time for some comic strips. Let's take a look. In the comic strip Zitz, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borkman, looks like Mom is helping Jeremy, her son, cook an omelet in the kitchen. And in the first frame, she says, Swirl the omelet pan around so the eggs coat the surface. And he says, like this. And he's holding the pan up, and he's got the pan off to the side, and he's swirling. You can see the eggs dripping down the in the bottom of the pan, so it covers the whole bottom of the pan. And then in the second frame, she looks at her phone and she says, Now, sprinkle in your fillings. And in the third frame, she says, On one half of the eggs and fold the other half over the top. Well, Jeremy's got about 2 feet of filling stacked on top of his omelet pan. And he says, I feel like you could have mentioned that step earlier. And that was Zitz. And then the comic strip Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker. Beetle's leaning against the building, got his phone out. He's looking at it. Rake's leaning up against the building. And two of his fellow privates say, Watch how fast Beetle can run. And here comes Sergeant Snorkel, and he says, You're in big trouble. And in the next frame, Beetle takes off with Sergeant Snorkel right behind him, and his two private friends are saying, He can get up to top speed in seconds, leaving Sarge in the dust. And Sarge in the next frame, he's stopped, and he's panting, and he's got his hands on his knees as Beetle goes zipping by. And then in the next frame, we see screech and lightning bolts. And the next frame, Beetle is laying down asleep next to the building. And his two buddies, who are also private, said, And he can stop on a dime. And that was Beetle Bailey. And then there's Dagwood, you know, from Blondie, this comic strip, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. Well, Dagwood's at the office. And Mr. Dithers just sneezed. Achoo! And Dagwood says, Boss, why don't you take the rest of the day off and go home? And Mr. Dithers goes, Cough, cough. Good call, Bumstead. You can handle things for me today, okay? Dagwood says, No problem, boss. I got this. And the next frame, Mr. Dithers got his coat on, and he's got his briefcase, and he's got a handkerchief wiping his nose, and he goes, God, I'm leaving the office in your hands. Dagwood says, Don't worry, boss. I'll take care of things. And then he stops as he gets to the door and he says, "Are you sure you can handle everything for me? Sniff, sniff." Dagwood says, "Absolutely, boss." So Mr. Dithers turns and says, "See you tomorrow morning." And Dagwood says, "Don't worry about a thing, boss." In the last frame, Dagwood's fellow workers come in. Dagwood's sitting at his desk in front of his computer, and one of his fellow workers says, "Dag, we heard the boss cut out early." And the other one says, "Are you sticking around until closing time?" And Dagwood says, "Are you kidding? I know a trap when I see one." And that was Blondie. Well, it's time for us to wish a happy birthday to some celebrities. Who is celebrating today? Oh my gosh, the singer and actor Pat Boone turns 91 today. Actor Morgan Freeman turns 88. Physicist Kip Thorne turns 85. Singer and actress Linda Scott turns 80. Guitarist Ronnie Wood with the Rolling Stones, he turns 78 today. Businessman Ron Dennis turns 78. Singer and songwriter Charlene turns 75. Businessman Ted Field turns 72. The singer Alan Wilder, he's with Depeche Mode, he turns 66 today. Bassist Simon Gallup with the group called The Cure, he turns 65. Model and TV host Heidi Klum, she turns 52 today. And singer and songwriter Alanis Morissette, she turns 51 today. And actor Tom Holland turns 29. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, June 1st, 2025. I hope you have a great day today. Bye-bye.